What? It's ASMR. People like that.
I hate mouth sounds. In fact, I go out of my way to cut them, to try to cut them out of our videos. Like, I'll take a bite of food and then I'll just cut right on the bite so you can't see them.
Oh my God, you slovenly beast.
Welcome back to another episode of Tuxedo Time, where we were Tuxedos It Is Time, podcast edition, slovenly beast edition.
That was a very offensive opening.
I'm so sorry. Everybody's already clicked off. Maybe I should just cut that out.
What are we talking about today other than farts? I mean burps.
We're talking about the failures that you don't see. Well, you're going to see them now because we're going to talk about them.
Oh, what'd you say?
I reached out to y'all on Instagram to see what you wanted us to talk about on the podcast. We've kind of changed the direction of the podcast a little bit. Not really. We're just conversations. Let's talk about shit. And Sean Chenko asked, can you talk about burnout and creative process? The failures behind the scenes that no one sees that had to be overcome.
I feel like we show a lot of stuff on our channel that's like pretty real.
Yeah, we don't hide a lot. I mean, there's definitely burnout and struggles that kind of happen behind the scenes, like from a day-to-day basis that I think are normal for a creative that people don't really talk about.
I think normal, arguably, for any person who exists in the world.
Yeah, definitely. I saw a really interesting diagram the other day. It was like what you think showing up every day looks like, and it's a bunch of circles that are all filled in, and then it's like what it actually means, and it was like a bunch of circles, and some of them were filled in half, some of them were filled in just like a cunter, and then other ones were filled in like full, you know, different levels. Sorry, like a 1/32nd of an inch.
It's like, tell me that you grew up with a bunch of carpenters in your family.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought that was really interesting because when I saw that for the first time, I think the first time I saw it was Lizzie Pierce posted it. I was like, oh my God, this is so relatable.
Skizzy Pierce. We should have her on the podcast.
Yes. I fucking love that woman. We definitely should. But so when she posted, I was like, this is the most relatable graphic I've ever seen because as a creator looking out, everyone looks like they have their shit together. Everyone looks like they're they're filling in their circles to the full. And I know I'm not. My circles look like the bottom half, right? Some days are full. Some days have nothing. Some days are half colored in. And so I was like, oh, this is interesting. And wow, other people, you know, feel like this too. So I think as creators, we go through the struggles. I've definitely gone through some burnout and in different ways. Right now I'm having a really difficult relationship with photography and I've been shooting photos for 20 years and I've gone through this same thing.
You are burned out with photography. You've been burned out with photography for a while.
A long time, probably a year. I've been trying to get it back. It's been a challenge. I don't know if it's, I hope it comes back. This is the longest period of time I've been burned out with photography. Might make a video about that to actually talk about it, but I guess going back to that, it's like I have a video planned and videos tend to be a bit of a form of therapy when you're talking about this kind of thing. Yeah, we don't hide a lot. And I think that's the thing about our channel is that like we share the highs, but we share the lows and the struggles. And that is kind of what makes a good story, in my opinion.
That's true, because I think that that's one of the things that we've embraced is actually when the story doesn't work out, it's actually better because it creates conflict and plot climaxes and things like that, whatever the literary devices are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're not trying to be dramatic. We're just documenting what real life is and not sugarcoating it. Something my therapist taught me is that like not every day is going to be peachy, right? Not everything's going to go your way and you're going to have highs and lows, but not every day is going to be
unless
peachy.
You're Sarah Dichie. We should have her on the podcast.
Definitely. I thought this was an interesting question because it's relevant to something that happened to us recently.
Yes, exactly. So we recently completed a 6-part helicopter travel series. If you haven't been watching this channel or listening to this podcast, you may not know about it, but
I'm pretty sure y'all know about it by now.
Yes,
but
we've advertised the heck out of it. Yes. But the, you know, editing that obviously for Becky has been arguably the biggest amount of work that she's ever taken on in her entire career.
If this is your first time listening to this podcast and you don't know what we're talking about, back in May, we took a 3-week long cross-country helicopter trip from Buffalo to California to get our helicopter overhauled. And it was a very taxing trip. We made a 6-part helicopter travel series. It took me 7 months to edit. We rolled out with it in October and November.
So it was the biggest piece of content or like set of content that you've ever produced and released, obviously.
Yeah.
But of course, taking 7 months to edit something doesn't mean that the YouTube channel goes on a hiatus for 7 months.
Right.
You're still trying to create new content.
Yeah, the work still has to happen. Obviously, you still have to be posting. I drop my uploads back to once a week because as a single person show, it's just really difficult to edit like commit to editing that and then keeping up on top of the uploads. So, but you know, the machine still has to go. So posting every second week, bulk recording, bulk editing, it was a lot of work. And, you know, to do one project for 7 months, like, it's just not realistic for YouTube.
No, the YouTube where quantity is king.
Exactly. If you've caught any of our videos, you probably heard us talk about this new series that we are making called Currently Roaming. We talked about going to New Brunswick to do road trip. We were asking you for recommendations of places to go and see, and we thought it would be a smart idea to film another series while editing a series. Mistake.
So tell me a little bit about the mindset in your, like, what is going on in the brain of Rebecca Peckham when you are either on a trip or editing afterwards in post? Like, tell me the different mindsets, because clearly those two mindsets are not compatible.
They're not, no. So the mindset when you're on a trip is you've done an extensive amount of pre-production. You figured out how many videos you're going to make for the most part, what the title and what the thumbnails are going to be. And you have a theme for each of these videos. And so you're going into the trip in the mindset of, like, these are the stories that I'm telling, but if something happens, I'm going to pivot and document the story. And so you're doing the trip, but you're also thinking, what's the story? What's the film? What are we filming? Do I have enough footage? All of that. When you're editing a series, you're past that. You've shot everything you have to shoot. So now you're putting together the puzzle. You have thousands of clips to cull through. You have to watch hours and hours and hours of helicopter comms, listen to helicopter comms on double. So you're listening to radio talk on double speed, and you're listening for Zero Whiskey Zulu. You're listening for keywords that are going to help you put a story together. So that in itself is, like, incredibly fatiguing.
Mind numbing.
Yeah. And so,
this is the scut work of your job.
Yeah. Once you're past all the calling and the footage, then you're putting together the puzzle, right? What is the story? How can I elevate the feelings of this specific edit? How can I tie these two things together? And of course, we did voiceover for this one as well. So writing that. So when you're in the editing mindset, you're 100% focused on that project, how all of these episodes are flowing together. Is the story working? Does this particular episode have a feeling? How am I tying together this part of the episode with this part of the episode? You're in the mindset of what the styling is, the color grading, the tone, the music choices. So when you're trying to film something else, but you're in the mindset of this style of series, especially when you're so deep into the story aspect, pull yourself out and to try to be creative when you've already have been being creative for the last 6 months and you're, like, sucked dry of ideas and so far into this niche, to pull yourself out of that and then have the mental clarity to be like, this is a new series and here are my new ideas and I'm inspired. It's just not possible. In order to gain clarity and have inspiration for a new project, you need to be separated from a heavy project for a long period of time, not while you're in it. It's just too much.
Got it. So
does that answer your question? I feel like that was a bit confusing.
What I'm taking away from that, it's kind of two things. One is that, say, let's not talk about a new project. Let's just talk about one project for a second.
Yeah.
Whether you're pre or post production.
Yeah.
Whether you're before the project and you're planning for it, or during the project and you're in it, you're looking for a story prospectively.
Yeah.
Afterwards, invariably nothing goes as planned and you've kind of shot everything in some elements.
Yeah.
So in post, after the fact, you're still looking for a story.
Yes.
But you're looking retrospectively.
Correct.
So it's prospective and retrospective, but you're still looking for a story. But it's they're so different.
Yes.
One's looking forward in time, one's looking back in time.
Yep.
So that's all, that is a mind fuck in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's two totally different ways of thinking.
Right.
Now, when you're in the retrospective post phase, looking for a story in footage you've already shot, now you're prospectively looking for a story in a different project, in a different universe.
Whoa, yeah.
So I see how it could be a little bit overwhelming. That's what I'm taking away from what you're telling me. Is that accurate?
That is 100% accurate. It's a really interesting way to put it. The thing that I feel like we don't really talk about much, and maybe on the podcast we do, is that when you're making a big project like this, you go through a lot of emotions, right? You're working very hard on it. And so sometimes you're working more hours than you normally work. So that time creeps into your personal time. So your whole life basically gets sucked up by this project. your whole mental space gets sucked up by the project. And you kind of go through, like, I call it a mid-series depression, where I'm just like, I just need this project to be done. I'm so tired of, like, listening to helicopter comms and, like, trying to find stories. I don't know if this is even good anymore. And then it's like, it's the creative process, right?
I don't know if I'm getting good anymore, because your mind and brain is just fried from seeing the same things over and over.
Exactly. You're just like, the track that you picked originally that made you cry when you heard it the first time no longer does anything to your emotions.
Oh, you've lost all the emotional response because you're so numb to it.
Yeah. And then you're like, does this even hit way I thought it would when I heard the song for the first time?
That's interesting.
Yeah. So we talk about the creative process where we're like, oh, this is really good. Oh, this is, you know, oh, this is okay. Oh no, this is shit. Oh my God, I'm shit. This sucks. Everything sucks. Oh, hang on. Maybe this is okay. No, this is great. You know, and that's the, and so you sit in the, like, this sucks, I suck kind of like within the series, but you keep pushing through to finish it because you know you have to finish it.
The doldrums of despair.
So you're emotionally worn down.
Yeah.
You have decision fatigue, and now you have to film a new series. It's impossible. It's impossible. And maybe it's possible for other people who are like more mentally stable than I am, but. And so.
Meanwhile, I'm just going along for the trip. Oh, this is fun. Oh, wow. All the kits are packed for me already. Oh, look at this. I just show up and have fun.
Here's the thing. The mistake that I made was that I thought I was going to be done editing before we took the trip. My goal was to be finished heading west. Episodes done, uploaded, ready before we launched episode one.
Oh,
mistake.
That's ambitious.
The problem was, as I think I could have done that. However, I went home for 2 weeks. I went to Sony Condo. I went to somewhere else. And so.
But it's the great expanding foam theory. It's the great stuff theory.
Oh, yeah. 100%. If you have the time, you'll fill the time.
Yeah. Like expanding foam.
Yeah. I probably should. Yeah, exactly. I shouldn't have taken those weeks off.
You're my little can of great foam.
But at the same time, the weeks that I did take off, I needed it. I needed to step away from the project and come back with fresh eyes. Nice fart. You sounded like you shit yourself that time.
Nobody can hear that because they're not next to the mic.
I felt it. Anyway.
Look, if you can burp, I can fart.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Everyone could also experience it. I can simulate it because I'm really good at armpit farts.
I got it. Yeah. Okay. What were we talking about? I was on a flow and then you farted.
I'm sorry.
This is classic. We're talking about something really important and then you'll like fart and then
going home.
Yeah. I was talking about taking a vacation while I was making my dream project for YouTube. Wow. World's smallest violin.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was saying was that I didn't finish the project as early as I thought it was going to be. And so the lesson I learned is if I have a deadline, I'm probably going to be working till that deadline. Great expanding foam stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Second is that
great expanding foam theory.
You can't finish a series and dive right back into a creative project. Your brain needs time to recover. It's like working out or whatever. I don't do a lot of workouts, but it's like if you do squats for the first time or you're doing squats and then like the next day your legs are fucked and then you keep doing squats and you're just like so fatigued that you're just like, I just can't go anymore. Mm-hmm. You need a break to recover.
Yeah, your body needs to rebuild.
And it's the same for this. And so your brain needs time to be able to come down and then be re-inspired. And I think as creatives, we need to be bored to gain ideas. I do anyway. And so there was no time to be bored. And so I just, anyway, we...
That's a recipe for burnout.
100%. I definitely felt like as we were building, so this series that I was going to be, we were going to film, and we're still making it, but... It's postponed. We tried it. It didn't work out. But we were going to go to New Brunswick, do a truck camping trip. We built out the truck. Everything was going wrong. The trip was, deadline was looming, and we hadn't even done a shakedown trip. Like, we hadn't slept in there.
What is a shakedown trip for the non-campers out there?
Shakedown trip is when you build out your setup and test it before you go on a big trip. So you feel out any deficiencies in your setup. You know, normally if you...
Oh, you just let her rip.
We just let her rip. So... Anything that we forgot or wasn't working or brought too much or too little of, there was no turning back because we were already on a week-long road trip all the way up to Maine.
Mm.
And so we were supposed to go to New Brunswick. There was a big storm. So we scaled it back and did New England instead. And by the second day, I was like, this was the biggest mistake. I don't even know what I'm filming. I feel like I need a vacation. That's kind of what the trip ended up turning into, was a really stressful vacation.
Yeah. But it was a confluence of factors that resulted in that. It wasn't just that you were in a different headspace for making this happen. It was, like you said, the truck being built out not optimally be- you know, the setup not being optimal with the chaos in the back. It was the bed rack not showing up until, you know, two weeks late. So we're scrambling. Then therefore that really led to us not being able to test the setup. And then on top of that, it was the weather that rolled into New Brunswick where it was just like heavy rainstorms in the fall. I was like, okay, there are multiple factors here that are resulting in this being a bit of a bust.
Yeah.
But, you know, you roll with the punches, you make with most of it. And I think that ultimately, like we said in the beginning of this episode, we embrace adversity when it comes to these trips. And when things go wrong, a lot of the entertainment is how are these two idiots going to deal with it?
Yeah, exactly. I think that the mindset shifted as we were building out the truck, like the week leading up to the trip when that bed rack was late. And I was like, okay, these are red flags. And I was like, okay, when we made the decision to do New England instead of New Brunswick, I was like, maybe this shouldn't be a series. Maybe this should be something different. Maybe this is just one video. And so in a period of a week, it went from a multi-episode truck camping series to New Brunswick with like the first episode being this truck build out and we were going to do our shakedown trip and then see what, and then the second episode was going to be us going. It went from that to like, we're going to go visit all of the places that we cut from our 2021 series heading east. And we're going to go do our hikes and stuff that we didn't make it to. And then it went from that to, oh no, we're just going to be driving and camping. It turned into two videos. One was the truck build and all the things that went wrong. And then it was the actual 3-night camping trip, which turned into a 16-minute video. So we wouldn't have even had enough footage to make a series. But I think we knew, like, after we went the first night, we're like, this isn't going to be a series.
Yeah.
We're not in the right headspace. And like, just things aren't going.
Yeah.
We don't have enough time either.
So moral of the story.
Don't film a series while editing a series.
Right. I think most people, though, are probably not creating series, though. That's like a very niche thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny because like if we were just making regular vlogs, it would be no problem to make, you know, 3-episode camping vlogs.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was overthinking it and overplanning it, it didn't really work out.
I was going to say, so what else would you have changed then for going forward?
Well, I think if I was going to do that trip again, and especially because we didn't get to do that shakedown trip, I think that it would have been better for us that week to stay closer to home. So just do New York State instead of driving 14 hours to Maine during fall where you have 10 hours of daylight.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was that we'd be getting up at sunrise. We would drive for 8 hours and we would get to camp an hour before sun went down. And so when you're driving for that long during the day, there's no time to stop and shoot photos. There's no time to stop and do hikes. So we didn't get to do any of the things that we had on our list because didn't get to enjoy camp in the morning because we were rushing. And they were rushing to set up before the sun went down. And then we were rushing to get to bed because we knew we had to get up early if we wanted to get to the next camp before the sun went down. So if I was going to do it again, that trip, I would have stayed closer to home. I would have picked campsites that were closer together. That weren't, you know, 8 hours of driving, maybe 3-4 hours of driving or less.
Mm.
And then for next year, when we attempt number two at this for an actual series, I'm not going to be driving as much during the day, but we're going to be in the summertime. So we're going to have a lot more daylight, which will be incredibly helpful.
I think the realities though of like truck camping, especially with like a rooftop tent, is that it's hard to, because I think we planned this trip from the mindset of if it was like a traditional road trip.
Yeah.
Like if we were staying in a hotel or a motel.
Mm-hmm.
And in those, it's like, yeah, you can drive like a full day and then you can stay in the hotel for a couple nights and you can roll up in the middle of the night and it's fine.
Right.
And then you could still get a good night's sleep and then go, oh, let's go hiking tomorrow. And then we'll come back to our hotel. And then with camping, it's like you have to set up camp and that's a couple hours of like extra work per day that goes into that.
Yeah.
And then you might not be as well rested because it's camp sleep. And then on top of that, too, if you're truck camping with a rooftop tent, you can't just leave everything set up and like at a campsite and go somewhere. Like your tent is you're like a turtle. Your home is literally on your automobile.
Right.
So it creates a bit of a weird thing where you have to tear down camp and then you have to be ready to go. And then it's also like in the back of your mind, depending on how neurotic you are, Becky Peckham. You're like, is my rooftop tent going to get stolen? Is someone going to come by with wrenches and steal my rooftop tent? You know, like that happens.
Not even that too, but like if you're traveling within a city and you're parked for a hike, all of your belongings are in that truck.
Right. And people know it if they see a rooftop tent too.
Oh, 100%. It's like not only the rooftop tent, but like you look in the back of the truck and like
all these bags. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, there's that level too of like, is my shit going to get stolen?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. We definitely treated it like more of a road trip instead of a camping trip. I think sometimes that it might be okay to stay at a campsite for longer. Like, I think in a perfect world, I like slow mornings at camp. I like to get up in the morning and have my coffee and sit around and enjoy the sights. And then like,
you're your father's daughter.
Well, I like to, you know, I don't want to like be packing up and leaving
right
away. And on the other side, I like to get to camp early enough where you can, you know, you can make your mocktail and sit around and rest and maybe put on some music. And then the sun goes down and you have a fire, and then you can stay up around the fire with your hot chocolate until 11 o'clock because you know you can sleep in the morning or enjoy camp slow in the morning.
Right. So, I think the destination is different when you're talking about overlanding in particular. I mean, that's probably why a lot of it is the exploration of like places, you know, the unknown or like being out there in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And that's the draw rather than trying to like use it as a road trip surrogate. You know, it's kind of like they're different purposes.
Definitely. I think if you're, especially too, if you're in a place where you can be in the wilderness where any place is a campsite, where you can kind of go and explore and then, okay, the sun's going down, we can set up camp right here.
Yeah. And I don't think we were prepared to do that given that that requires going even further.
Yes.
I.e. like into public lands, which unfortunately in the northeastern part of this country, we don't really have many of.
Right.
Whereas like, unless you go to Canada and the Crown Land, that's like the equivalent of the Bureau of Land Management land.
Which is why we wanted to go to New Brunswick, because I think like 50 or 60% of the province is Crown Land.
I'm not sure that stat, but that sounds right to me and I'm going to believe it.
It's significant, which is why we picked New Brunswick over, you know, anywhere else. So, you know, we ended up using hip camps, especially because it was our first time. We were like, let's just book hip camp sites because when you're a new overlander, we're not new to camping whatsoever, but we're pretty new to like truck camping. So if you say like, this is a new experience, I've never slept in my rooftop tent before, I don't know if this whole setup is going to work. Now you're driving for long periods of day. You're learning a lot while you're doing that. Now add on top of that, like trying to figure out what Forest Service roads are legit to go up and like where you actually are legally allowed to pitch a rooftop tent. That it adds another layer of skill that I just don't have yet.
Yeah, I guess.
And another layer of planning as well.
And a little layer of remoteness.
Yeah.
So like if something did go wrong and you were missing a key part of your kit, like it, let's be real, like, so for people who don't know, hip camps are basically like an Airbnb for people who own land.
Yeah.
And they've made little curated campsites on their land and you rent them for a nominal fee.
And some of them have, you know, some of them are actual campsites like you would normally see traditionally with like outhouses and showers and like a comfort station. Other ones just have a porta potty and some of them don't have anything but just like a place for you to park your car.
Yeah.
Like no electrical, no nothing. So it's kind of like remote camping. It's just on somebody's property.
Yeah.
And so we kind of did a mix of them. One of the sites we went to was more of an established campground that had multiple sites and it had a porta potty. The first one we went to had three sites with electrical hookup, no bathrooms. So we brought our own. And then the last one was just somebody's random property with nothing.
Yeah. Something that I, and those, all those campsites were all markedly different.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But something that I realized is like on the first night, beautiful campsite next to this little river. It had, you know, you could hear the river next, right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
You could see the river. But there was like three campsites and they were maybe like a couple hundred feet away from each other.
Yeah.
So you could also see other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so in the middle, it felt like the middle of night, it was probably like 9 p.m. Whenever we were going to bed, like a car drove up. And we're like, oh, fuck, who is that? Like, that's kind of scary. It's weird. But it's like just someone else coming into camp at the site next to you.
Right.
It makes you realize that camping has a wide range of experiences. And I think that when we inadvertently, by accident, got into camping, it was because we were flying helicopters in remote parts of this country.
Yeah, our first experience ever camping was like in the remote ass wilderness of Quebec.
Right. Because we were forced to land because of poor visibility.
We had never been to a campsite.
No,
ever.
Like we had never camped like at a campsite, let alone, and we were doing wilderness camping in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, with no knowledge.
Which is kind of, it's kind of nuts, but like that was what camping was to me as a first experience.
Yeah.
So like maybe that's a pretty high bar to like compare things to because that's pretty out there.
Not a lot of people who are really into camping go to campsites. Like they don't go to the, because it's another level of adventure, but it's also another level of preparedness to be.
And danger.
And danger to be in the backcountry camping.
Right. But for me now, camping, that's the bar to which every other camp experience is now compared to. So like camping on a campsite to me feels just not like, I don't want to say not legit, because I don't want to delegitimize anybody's definition of camping, because there's a lot of people where that's just way more accessible and it's way more fun. And so there's, you know, there's different ways to camp that are all legitimate. But with that said, like now I'm comparing wilderness camping in a helicopter to like pulling up to a campsite with people right next to you. Like that doesn't feel to me as like remote and as adventurous.
Right.
And I think for me, maybe it's the level of adventure that I equate to camping. I think that's why most people camp, because it feels like an adventure.
Yeah.
But like we've been now desensitized to it because our level of adventure now has been set way up high.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, okay, if I want to go overlanding, it's like bring on the middle of nowhere, like out there.
And I think when you look at overlanding as like a definition, like it's obviously it's traveling overland, it's vehicle-based adventure, but it's not like taking your truck to a campsite and camping. That's not overlanding, that's camping, car camping.
I mean, like technically it's overlanding, but it's probably just like a very tame version of it.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like we're not yucking anybody's yum, because I also feel for me that there's a certain time where I actually do like going to a campsite. It's way more chill.
But you just love it all.
I love it all. I will do remote helicopter camping, yes. Roll up to a national park campsite, tent camp, yes. Like Forest Service road, backcountry, whatever, yes. I love it all, right?
She ain't picky.
I'm not. And so there's a level of safety that comes with going to a public campsite or that you rent, especially at like a park.
Yeah.
But there's way less adventure, way less privacy, a lot more comforts. Now you have your bathroom, your comfort station, you have showers. And so depending on the type of trip you're doing, maybe that is better, right?
That certainly would have been a better way to get into camping, or a more, I guess, friendly way to get into camping.
It's funny. I was talking to Dan Becker, who's he has a great channel on backpacking and outdoor gear on YouTube. And anyway, him and I have been trying to link up for like a camping trip. And he does a lot of backpacking. We've only done one beginner backpacking
trip. We should get Dan Becker on the podcast.
We need to have Dan Becker on the podcast. 100%. Definitely.
We're on a let's see who we can get on the podcast kick here.
Yeah. He called me. And I was like, calling people on the phone? What is this?
I call people.
And so I know. Anyway, so Dan calls me and he's like, you know, we're talking about doing this backpacking trip just at Pictured Rocks. And so he's like kind of giving me the rundown. So he's like, this hike is really good because, you know, there's like actual outhouses. And I was like, okay. He's like, you know, so you don't have to like really worry about that like for the first time. And I was like, I've never been to a campsite before with an outhouse. My first time camping was on a rock in the middle of nowhere on the top of Ski Hill. The second time camping was the next night on top of a rock. So I'm like, I'm not too concerned about that. But I mean, it's really great to know that there's like a pit toilet or an outhouse, because it definitely makes things more comfortable. But it was funny because for him, like he's used to backpacking and like probably shitting in a hole. Mm. And so you have somebody who's new, who's never been backpacking before. It's like,
so he assumes people are going to start camping the normal way and people like, i.e. at a campsite with amenities.
With bathrooms and showers, right? So like getting somebody to go from a campsite with bathrooms and showers to backpacking and like shitting in a hole.
A cat hole?
Yeah, is a huge change. And so having a pit toilet or like a porta potty or an outhouse, you know, it's like, and it's definitely comfort for me as a person with gut issues. Like I would prefer to have an outhouse, you know. It's more comfortable, but like
if you got no qualms pooping in a bag.
Well, if I got to poop in a bag, I got to poop in a bag. So, but yeah, it was just funny because I was like, oh yeah, like normally people who are starting in camping are going to campsites. That's okay. I have realized as I dive into this world of like truck camping and overlanding that there are some people who are very gatekeepy about this.
Oh, how so?
Just like, you know, certain things not being as legit as others, or like, you know, so-and-so is doing this and like, that's not real overlanding or real whatever. Oh, and God. Like, I'm not here to gatekeep. If you want to tent camp at a park, great. I love it. If you want to tent camp in the fucking backcountry, great. Love it.
You love camping in our backyard.
I just love it. You know, it's great. Anyway, I think that if we're going to do this again, which we are this summer, we're going to be looking for more backcountry exploration style things when you and I are together. And when I'm solo, I'm probably going to stick to more populated sites as a solo camper for the first time. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm not overly comfortable being in the woods like alone as a female. Freaks me out.
You need to roll strapped.
And then I'm getting my mom for part of the trip. She's never been camping before. So we're gonna
ever.
She's never been camping. So her and I we're gonna stick to
talk about needing porta potties. I think that would be definitely a good idea for somebody who's never camped.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. If you want to start camping or if you want to have one of your loved ones come with you, it's like you need to really ask them like what's freaky, like what's uncomfortable, and then take those discomforts. Like seriously, if somebody wants to go camping, but like the toilet is a really big issue, don't make fun of them for it. Figure out how to make it work. For us, we carry a camp toilet and poop bags and a tent when we go to our land and when we go to these campsites, because I would just honestly prefer to have a little bit more of a real bathroom. Some of these campsites, especially hip camps, like they say to bring your own bathroom because otherwise you're digging a hole on somebody's property and pooping in it. When you're in the woods, it's not a big deal because unless there's specific things that say you have to pack out your shit. It's just like a comfort for me. So I know like my mom is worried, as long as I can shower every couple of days and have a bathroom, then we're going to stick to real campsites that have a shower and a bathroom. And that's going to be a good experience for her. She'll get that level of adventure of camping, sleeping in a tent, having campfires, being outside.
She hasn't been spoiled by the insaneness of helicopter overlanding.
Yeah, overlanding in a helicopter.
That's what it is, isn't it?
I guess. Yeah,
like, you don't have to sleep in the vehicle to be overlanding, right? Like most overlanders.
I mean, overlanding is basically like moving over land. So I guess technically a helicopter is moving above the land.
Oh, we're definitely moving over land.
Yeah. Anyway.
I would argue that's the most legit way to move over land.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I guess lesson learned, don't try to film a series while editing a series.
In summary, we went on a little bit of a camping tangent there.
Yeah, because it's my new passion. I love it. I don't know if it was this episode or before we were talking about the passion for photography.
Yes.
Is waning mm-hmm. greatly for me, which is really difficult to deal with because I feel like I identify a lot with the word photographer.
Interesting. That's part of your identity.
It is. So to feel the way I feel about photography right now.
You feel guilty.
It hurts. Like I almost have grief on like the way I feel about it, which is really weird.
Interesting.
Yeah. I used to dance, right? Dancing was a big passion of mine for 5 years. I loved it. And then, so when we moved to Vancouver, I stopped dancing. And so there was a bit of that where I was like, oh, I don't identify myself as a dancer, but this is something I really, really love. And so it was hard to be like, I've moved on and this is no longer a part of my life and that's okay. But because photography has been such a part of my life and my job for so long, to be like, I don't want to take pictures is like, why? You know, it's not as easy as letting dancing go.
I understand because you have more history with it.
Yeah.
But that's okay though. You haven't stopped.
No.
You just change your relationship with it.
Yeah. And I think that camping, one of the reasons why we went on this tangent, I feel like camping has replaced photography
mm-hmm.
In a way.
That's so bizarre. Not objectively it's not bizarre, but knowing you and where you've come from.
Yeah.
Like if 2013 Becky Peckham could see 20 or 2014 Becky Peckham could see 2024 Becky Peckham.
Crying in the woods, like walking for 5 seconds.
Oh my God. We were like, there's a clip of you doing that.
I know.
When we were looking for land, when we thought our whole lives were going to unfold in Newfoundland, which they didn't, but.
There are little like things from my childhood though, that I think of that I'm like, oh my God, these were moments where this love for the outdoors could have been.
This little spark of adventure.
Yeah. It could have been fostered. But because of, and obviously not blaming my family, but my family weren't that outdoorsy.
Neither was mine, which is the funny thing how you and I ended up in this weird situation.
But like those things weren't fostered because there wasn't really a chance for them to be fostered because I didn't have anybody in my life who was like, hey, let's go in a canoe and go set a fire on a beach. I was just exposed to that during camp, like summer camp.
Yeah.
And so, and I didn't really express any interest beyond that because I don't know. I guess sometimes kids just don't do that, right? They had a good time and they think about it, but it maybe just don't bring it up again.
You know, what's funny is I thought about something similar, not recently, but every now and then, like I look back at like my late father who passed away when I was in my early 20s. And I remember he was an electrical engineer.
Yeah.
And one year for my birthday, I think from a friend or an aunt or an uncle or something, I got an electronics kit for kids, mm-hmm. which basically came, it was like a project board, a speaker, an alarm, a couple switches, a whole bunch of resistors.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
And I didn't understand electricity though.
Yeah.
Like it just, I was like probably like 7 years old. It was like, it was too advanced for how old I was, not having any understanding of electricity. However, my dad was an electrical engineer. In my mind, it never occurred to me to ask him, hey dad, can you sit down with me and help me with this?
Yeah.
I'm really interested in making this work. He would have loved that.
Yeah.
I would have loved that. But like, there just never was that it's like passing in the wind. There's no, the opportunity never presented itself.
It's like you're not aware enough as a child to be like, oh, this is something I could get help with because I,
yes,
or like, this is something that I experienced at camp, that was a thing that you just do at camp.
Right. And that's what, getting back to what you were saying, it's almost like, I'm sure if you went to your parents, it's like, Mom and Dad, I'd really like to go in a canoe and or have a bonfire or something that was just more, you know, those were very, they would have probably been like, oh, that's a really special moment as a family.
Yeah.
And like, but it's just never like, it's us as stupid kids. We just never like put two and two together.
Yeah. It's just like, we did this thing at camp and that was what happened at camp.
Right.
And it's that's just it. Like,
it was compartmentalized.
I mentioned it to my mom a while ago. She's like, why didn't you ever say anything? I was like, I didn't even think of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, anyway, yeah.
So moral of the story, if you have kids, interrogate them, ask them what they want to do. And you'll be surprised. You might be surprised that they might come up with some really nice family memory creating events. Anyway.
So that was a bit of a tangent, but I guess long story short, creative burnout, failures, I guess at all outside of the camping, you know, tangent, I think it all kind of comes full circle. And these are the things that we struggle with.
100%. Yeah. That was the original question, wasn't it? What kind of burnout or like failures do you are going on behind the scenes that
yeah.
you don't necessarily see on the channel?
I definitely think the photography thing feels like a failure.
In a way, I mean, you yeah. obviously view it as a failure. I don't.
I do, yeah.
I don't, not once would I ever say like, oh, you're a failure because you don't have the same relationship with photography as you did.
Yeah.
But also, it's not part of one of my core identity either, right?
Right.
But that's kind of like the same question that you've asked me is it's like, you know, if you say we won the lottery, would you quit your job?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have a very hard time doing that because, you know, becoming an interventional radiologist, which is my day job,
it's your identity.
Also my night job sometimes when I'm on call.
Yeah.
It's like part of my core identity. It's like, that's what I've spent, you know, so many, you know, 14 years of post-secondary education right. becoming.
Yeah. And it's a lot of time dedicated to it, right?
It is. And it's just like, I would feel definitely guilty mm-hmm. doing that.
Yeah.
But as the years weigh on me.
And things are changing.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, you know what? I could definitely go part-time.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
The burnout's real.
Burnout is real, man.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're 37 minutes there on the clock.
39. We went longer than the last one, you dick. Bad man.
I know. I started talking about camping and then.
That's all right. I started talking about helicopters and you were just like, oh my God. Okay. Wrap it up, Nicholas.
Wrap it up, Nicholas. Let's go. Well, we're going to end it here. So thank you guys so much for listening. And, you know, if you want to watch Heading West, we'll leave it on our show notes, beckyandchris.com/podcast, whatever episode this is. But of course, it's on our main YouTube channel at Becky and Chris. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Ew. Goodbye.